This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Way on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, we've got a full house, a full studio. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Dean's here.
G'day.
Welcome back, Sarah.
Howdy.
Damien's being quiet on the panel there, but waving. My name is Matt. Historic, monumental, and transformative are some of the words to describe the big news of last week.
The election?
No, actually, we're not talking about the election.
Oh.
Amidst all of our political excitement locally, the United Nations passed a resolution to appoint an independent expert on sexuality and gender identity.
How long did it take to get to this point?
Who was against it, and what tactics did they employ to try to water the resolution down?
And what role did Australians play in getting the resolution through?
To find out what this all means for the LGBT people around the world, we're speaking tonight with international LGBT leaders and Chile's ambassador to the United Nations, Marta Moras. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
And there have to be an openness to the fact that, in fact, these kinds of abuses and serious violations of human rights are happening everywhere in the world.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities, from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Now we're kicking off in the USA tonight. Back in 2013, two gay men filed a class action lawsuit against an LA-based company called Sparks Networks, claiming that the company's various dating sites, including ChristianMingle.com and Catholic
Sorry, what was that? ChristianMingle.com.
Christian Mingle. Mingle, not sort of, you know, grinding or anything like that.
Is that a euphemism for something I'm not aware of?
It's a chaste and spiritual euphemism, if it is a euphemism at all. And it complained that they excluded same-sex options for singles, so restricting the options by forcing users to register as man-seeking woman or woman-seeking man, they said, violated an anti-discrimination law in California that requires businesses to provide full and equal accommodations regardless of sexual orientation. Now, LGBT singles looking for love have a new online dating option. Because the lawsuit has been successful, they must open its many sites, including Christian Mingle, to those looking for same-sex connections.
Wow, that's actually pretty big, really, for America.
It is a bit.
What does this mean for the other sites that we're familiar with? Do they have to open it up to heteros?
Well, all the sites that are owned by Spark Networks have to be opened to... This doesn't include Grindr. That's a different company. So this is all just against one company. And a state judge has approved the terms and requires that Spark applies these changes within 2 years. And the company has agreed to pay each plaintiff $9,000 and $450,000 in attorney's fees. And a representative from Spark said he was pleased to resolve this litigation.
I don't think if I had a profile on that sort of site, I'd still be comfortable putting up man seeking man, because I reckon you'd get a barrage from everybody else on the site, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be asking for trouble?
It remains to be seen. So users of Christian Mingle and other Spark platforms will only ask for a user's binary gender, and they've agreed to add a new search and profile feature for those seeking same-sex partners in the future. And ChristianMingle.com, in case you're wondering, emphasises long-term Christian relationships and finding a partner on the same faith spectrum. It started in 2001 and claims to have one of the largest communities of Christian singles. So they're going to be adding some same-sex-attracted Christian singles to their roster.
Maybe we should go on and create a profile.
Yeah, I remember a friend of mine here, actually. She was always upset that there weren't enough Christian dating sites for lesbians. So this one is for her now.
There we go. We'll send it out to her.
Sounds like a marketing opportunity, yeah. I think.
Over to Japan now.
Yeah, and Japan's labour ministry is to define discrimination against sexual minorities as a form of sexual harassment in its guidelines for employers. and this is reported in the Japan Times this year. Currently, the guidelines define sexual harassment as any language or actions that are sexual in nature and directed toward or between employees. But until now, they've not included reference to gay, lesbian, bisexual or transgender employees. The new guidelines will include reference to sexual orientation and gender identity and will be implemented from January 2017. And this is news just after a couple of weeks after a group of 30 companies in the country, including plenty that we know, are pretty strong.
Panasonic, it's all the big names, isn't
Sony,
it?
Sony, yeah. IBM. Yeah, they've all announced a set of standards for boosting LGBT diversity and inclusivity at work. So they're ahead of the government's.
This is something we've seen around the world, but particularly in Asia, where multinationals have LGBT policies way ahead of the rest of their communities and almost become advocates in that way.
Yeah, it sounds like this must be. So these HR-drafted guidelines also include recognition of same-sex partnerships and the extension of spousal benefits to same-sex partners and appropriate bathroom policies for transgender employees. So they really are
quite advanced, really.
Doing quite well.
Not so good news, though, in India. The Indian Supreme Court has refused to hear a petition that challenges the law that criminalises gay sex.
Again?
A setback to gay rights activists battling in the country's courts to try and overturn the ban. A number of well-known lesbian, gay and bisexual Indians have argued that the Section 377 of Indian's Penal Code...
Yes, the British one.
Yes, I know. Which prohibits carnal intercourse against the natural order with any man, woman or animal.
Oh, well, it's thoughtful to include everything, isn't it?
undermines the fundamental rights for failing to protect their sexual preferences. I'm not sure about bestiality, but anyway.
The ban ended a four-year period of decriminalisation that helped bring homosexuality increasingly out into the open in this quite deeply conservative country.
Some Western countries have tried to pressure India to overturn the ban, but as we can see, nothing's happened yet.
Moving across the border to Pakistan, currently it's illegal for transgender Pakistanis to get married to anyone, but change may be on its way for the Muslim community's transgender community. A group of 50 Pakistani clerics recently released a fatwa saying that some trans people should be able to marry and that abuse and denial of inheritance is unacceptable.
So this is actually quite a bit of a breakthrough because it is the religious leaders who have led the charge for change. It's only for the transgender community and even probably parts of it.
It gets better. The fatwa stated that a female-born trans person having visible signs of being a male may marry a woman, or a male-born trans person with visible signs of being a female, or vice versa. Now, despite the marriage limitations, the fatwa makes clear that acts intended to humiliate, insult or tease trans people is haram or sinful, and the rights to family inheritance and Muslim burial should be extended to trans Pakistanis. To deny inheritance, the group said, is inviting the wrath of God. So there.
In a brief, Canadian PM Justin Trudeau, if you haven't seen the photos, check out our Facebook page.
Ooh, he's a hottie.
He has attended and had the time of his life, he says, at Toronto Pride.
There apparently is 1.4 million adults in the US that now identify as transgender.
And Puerto Rico has unveiled its first LGBT monument, which also serves as a memorial to the 49 victims of the June 12 massacre at Orlando's Pulse nightclub.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Tiseke Kasambalas from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the Worldwide Wave.
Bit of action on Facebook. One of the stories we posted during the week, John Howard commented calling for laws to protect those who are apparently affected, quote, by same-sex marriage. This is the old the wedding cake story out of the US type thing, calling for those sorts of laws. Greg says, hashtag, who asked you, old heterosexual man? And Adams says, I have a moral objection to dealing with obnoxious Christians. Surely he wouldn't have a problem with me refusing to offer services to other Christians.
Yeah, it was a bit of a thought bubble, I thought. I mean, John Howard, as much as I'm not a fan of his politics...
A politician with a thought bubble?
Yeah, look, I'm not a fan of his politics, but I would have thought his comments would be, there'd be a bit of internal logic, but that one was just, can you imagine, you know, oh, I'm here to buy some flowers. No, you're not. Get the hell out.
That's W3Joy on Facebook.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time.
This is your Fun Fast Facts.
So the news during this last week comes out of the United Nations, where a historic vote of the United Nations Human Rights Council established an independent expert on SOGI, sexual orientation and gender identity. Many groups around the world have been fighting for this for a long time, and ILGA, who we've spoken with a number of times, say this is one of the most progressive resolutions out of the UN, particularly in terms of LGBT rights. One of the more significant things was it was led out of Latin America. So seven Latin American countries came together to put forward the resolution.
So that was Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Mexico and Uruguay.
Muy bien.
Very good. So this position is likely to be filled at the upcoming September session of the Human Rights Council. And it's really a position that has a broad remit, and it's to guide the UN on any sorts of issues to do with sexual orientation and gender identity worldwide. It's sort of akin to that position that President Obama created, an ambassador for LGBTI issues, where they can go around the world, visit countries, try and create change. It also has some investigative powers, though. So where there are issues of violence against LGBT people, they can go in and investigate on behalf of the UN and report back.
If people want to find out more about the US, Randy Barry, we did actually have a show on him.
We did. We did. The US Ambassador for LGBTI.
Which is
persons,
available on our podcast.
Which is joy.org.au/worldwidewave. The resolution was not without issue, so it went through 23 in favour, 18 against and 6 abstentions, but there were some quite hostile amendments brought by Pakistan on behalf of a group of countries under the banner of the Organisation of Islamic Cooperation.
I like the fact that the comment we have here that was the organisation was without Albania. They obviously decided they didn't want to be part of the Islam.
The hostile bit. Yep.
So we will take you through that, but we thought we would hear first of all from one of the countries that proposed this resolution, which was Chile. Their ambassador to the UN, Marta Moras, explains why the vote was so significant.
Well, let me tell you, I think this is an historic day for the international community in general and for all of us who believe in the multilateral system, because it has been proven once more that we can sit down and dissent and yet be able to agree on a path that will satisfy at least the needs of some of the members of the international community. It is clear that there is a protection gap. It has been proven by all the evidence. The two earlier resolutions that were passed by the Council in 2011 and in 2014 asked for a report. The report was produced, and it shows that there is a big, huge problem in many parts of the world.
So now we have the appointment of a special rapporteur, a special human rights investigator who will look into this protection gap, as you say, but has it come at a price? There has been, in this council, a huge amount of interest in changing, modifying resolutions. This particular resolution saw 11 amendments tabled. This isn't necessarily a test case, but can it cope with this kind of issue?
You're right to say that this is not necessarily the test case. There are many others. And what is happening in the Council and the climate tells you, and the fact that there are 35 resolutions that have been discussed, of which in total 54 amendments were received, it's telling you that there is a problem of sitting down and talking to each other and looking at formulas that will satisfy the different perspectives and the different realities at the national level. One can understand that, of course, there are countries where maybe an independent expert, which is what was approved today, would not be in a position to recommend that there is a move towards changing the legislation or the constitution, because that will take time. There has to be a national recognition that there is an issue. There has to be the political will. No, there has to be support from civil society and others. No, and there have to be an openness to the fact that, in fact, these kinds of abuses and serious violations of human rights are happening everywhere in the world. Let me tell you, this session started in the wake of Orlando killings.
I was going to ask, did that have an impact on garnering support for this resolution? I know it's been 20 years plus in the making after it was first announced at the General Assembly in New York, but...
Well, first of all, of course, it is a tragedy, as you were saying. And it has brought home that this is an issue that can occur anywhere and everywhere. The issue is that there is a serious problem of dialogue on essential human rights issues in the world, not that is being reflected in the Council of Human Rights. A confrontation between different parts of the world. And we think, and Chile in particular, you know, our commitment with the United Nations and the multilateral system in general is very strong. There is no alternative to managing the affairs of this planet of ours if it isn't together by talking to each other.
And that was Chilean Ambassador Marta Mara speaking to UN Radio. Coming up, we have more responses to this historic UN resolution and some practical reasons this position is so important.
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hallam, Melbourne.
And you are listening to the World Wide Wave.
On Joy 94.9.
Couple of messages coming in on Facebook. Sergey has just joined us. Thanks, Sergey. Welcome aboard. And a message from Greg. Great show, World Wide Wave team. He sent us a thumbs up emoji. We're sending you the kiss emoji back.
Now, the new United Nations independent expert on sexuality and gender identity will have a tough job. And Charles Radcliffe from the UN Human Rights Office, speaking here just after the Orlando shootings, sets the tone on why the role is so important.
This looks like a deliberate targeting of the gay community, motivated by a deep inner hatred. Now, we'll know more as this investigation unfolds, but we already know from his family, who've spoken about him being revolted and disgusted when he saw two gay men kissing. And unfortunately, this is a little glimpse into a deep well of hatred that exists, unfortunately, in societies around the world. We see this violence. This is a very dramatic example of it and a horrific scale, but this goes on a daily basis in countries around the world.
Just how common is this kind of violent homophobia in the US and beyond?
It's very common. You know, the official statistics that the FBI collects in this country on hate crime show that the number of attacks motivated by homophobia are second only to the number of attacks motivated by racism. And that's in the absolute numbers. When you consider that the LGBT community is a much, much smaller percentage of the population, LGBT people are actually at much higher risk of being attacked than any other sector of the American population. And that's true, too, in other countries. I mean, huge numbers of people being killed and injured around the world, wherever statistics are collected. And we also know that those statistics are probably just the tip of the iceberg, because a lot of this crime goes unreported.
Here in the United States, a lot of solidarity has been expressed by and for the LGBT community over these appalling killings. But obviously, in some parts of the world, there's an element of violence being state-sanctioned.
Look, there's a lot of hate speech, including in the United States. You know, you just have to take a glimpse into the dark world of internet forums and, you know, comment boards and see how much hatred there is. The UN recently put out a video for the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. We had to spend 2 days taking death threats down from the YouTube comments board. There is really a deep well of hatred. Now, it is given state sanction in some countries. You're quite right. I mean, we had a senior government minister in Indonesia recently say that allowing LGBT activism to flourish was more dangerous to Indonesia than dropping a nuclear bomb on the city of Jakarta. We've had an Italian MP who said that he would kill his son if he told him he was gay. You know, we have time and again politicians, whether they're municipal or national, giving essentially a veneer of legitimacy to hatred.
Why do you think that this persists to such an extent?
Well, I think there is something visceral that people are, you know, feel that it's legitimate to express. Unfortunately, this is kind of culturally encouraged in many, many parts of the community. And they, you know, it's reinforced by what their parents, what people's parents tell them, what schools tell them, what religious leaders tell them. And it's essentially nurturing in people's hearts this hatred of others. And it's, you know, we can look at other areas and say there's always this kind of discomfort with difference that exists around society in all societies. And it leads to hate crimes against other vulnerable vulnerable groups. That's true. And it is the job of school systems, political leaders, community leaders, to try to get people past that and make sure that people are comfortable with people that are different from them.
And how concerned are you and how concerned should we be at the rise of terrorist groups that put homophobia at the centre of their ideology?
It's terrifying, but it's important to keep it in perspective. If you look globally at the number of killings and attacks on members of the LGBT community, you know, it's only a tiny fraction of them are coming from terrorist groups or individuals motivated by terrorist ideology. For the most part, you know, this is brutal violence that is taking place out of the headlines, out of the spotlight, on a daily basis in countries around the world. And it's just people who are often kind of angry and embittered and feeling alienated by change in society, and they lash out and attack a very vulnerable group, the LGBT community. They're often the first in the firing line.
Obviously, it would be a help to have stiffer hate crime legislation in place in many parts of the world to try and deter this sort of violent outburst.
This is something the UN is pushing for around the world. In countries where hate crime laws exist and are applied, we have seen the impact that it can have in protecting people from hate crimes and giving them redress when they are attacked. But unfortunately, too few countries have these laws in place. We need hate crime laws, anti-discrimination laws, and above all, public education. Education in schools, so that we stamp this hate out at the very start. You know, to end, there was a great quote Nelson Mandela used to say, no child is born hating another person. They learn to hate and they can be taught to love. And that is really, after all the laws are passed and everything is said and done, we have to stamp this hatred out at source by teaching people that they can get along with one another.
Charles Radcliffe there from the UN Human Rights Office, speaking to UN Radio, and really putting into perspective the potential benefits of this new role created by the UN, that it's not necessarily about the high-profile issues that come up, like Orlando. It's about those everyday issues, those everyday discriminations and acts of violence that have that keep coming up around the world.
I think it's amazing because you don't often hear a UN person, or as far as I'm aware, you used to political speech. It doesn't talk about hate in that kind of very thoughtful way he spoke about it there, that no child is born with hate. Yeah, it is human, and it's not blaming the person necessarily, but trying to combat that from the source.
We were sort of talking here about, you know, what is there sort of a link to this role? And it's sort of like here in Victoria, where we've got a gender and sexuality commissioner for the first time in Rowena Allen. It's that kind of role. It can work across various parts of the United Nations to just constantly remind them of LGBT issues and prod them and push countries or committees or reports to include things. And I always remember when Paula Gerber from Kaleidoscope comes in, she talks about the same sort of thing. You're just constantly there reminding, we're still here, yep, let's prod.
This is still an issue. And the more you shine a light on these things, the less the individual countries who aren't doing anything about it now can hide.
It's about not evading reality, I think. Ultimately, the LGBTIQ community exists. We are here.
Despite what Bob Carter says.
Exactly. We've always been here. Homosexuality wasn't invented with disco. And it's really,
really?
It's really just a question of making sure that every country in the world acknowledges that we exist and therefore we deserve a share of each country's resources.
But how are we going to change the minds of the countries that actually voted against this resolution?
It's going to take time.
I mean, the ones that are listed, they're no real surprise there. And you've got China, you've got Russia, Saudi Arabia, United Emirates. It's the usual.
I wonder if these countries as well, are these countries also ones that don't have decent rights for women? Because I think that effectively, as women and gay rights, they kind of come up together as equal rights.
I was thinking the same thing, and I think that in some respects the move for gay rights is very similar to the women's suffragettes movement. And in the sense that, you know, they came from a position where everyone was like, yeah, as if. And then within a certain amount of time, they broke through. And New Zealand, I think, was the first country that gave women the vote. And now, of course, it's seen as something, of course women have the vote. It took a while.
It's not, of course, everywhere. If you saw the Suffragettes movie recently, they show, you know, Saudi Arabia 2015.
Well, yeah, Saudi Arabia, women aren't even allowed to drive. But, yeah, I mean, the baby steps initially, but then there will be a groundswell. It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
We've had that come up in various shows that we've had, where that's the first step to getting in. That you talk about women's rights, and that's the easier for people to get round in their heads.
There is lots of good news in this UN resolution, and it is best summed up here by Charles Radcliffe from the UN Human Rights Office and Jessica Stern, who we've spoken with before from Outright Action International.
This is a huge development. It means that for the very first time here at the United Nations, the UN Human Rights Council has appointed an investigator who is going to go out around the world and come back and report on the human rights situation of lesbian, gay, bi, trans people right around the world. That person will be able to take up individual allegations, take those up with governments. They'll be able to make country visits. They'll be able to put together really groundbreaking studies that expose this problem and put forward very concrete, practical recommendations to governments and work with governments to put reforms in place. Beyond all of the resolutions and the reports and the discussions that happen here at the UN, there's also been an important development, which is the launch of a big public education campaign. And that's because the UN knows you don't change the world just by changing laws. You have to change people's hearts and minds too. And so we have a campaign, the UN Free and Equal Campaign, launched in 2013, championed by Ban Ki-moon, led by the UN Human Rights Office, supported by celebrities around the world, and done with the support of activists and communities on the ground right around the world. And it's very rapidly become one of the most popular ever UN human rights campaigns.
Frankly, it's very important to note the geographic diversity. Some of those states that are opposed to LGBTI people and actually encourage incitement to violence against LGBTI people try to say, you know, homosexuality is a Western phenomena or a product of colonial imposition. And of course, we know that's not factually accurate. We know that's just a political strategy being used to scapegoat local communities. And what this statement really makes very clear is that actually the majority of the support for this mandate is coming from communities in the global south that are saying, this is our priority for ourselves. We need more resources. We need more support so that we can tackle the root causes of homophobia and transphobia.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Douglas.
And this is Paula.
From Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, keeping a watchful eye on LGBTI rights across Asia and the Pacific.
On the World Wide Wave.
If you go to Facebook, because we do often get people, you know, messaging in every now and then, they really don't know what we look like. You can hear these wonderful voices and you're not quite sure who the goofy people are behind them. We've posted our photo right on Facebook on the header of our Facebook page, W3 Joy. You can see us all in our splendour and happiness.
It's very rare to get all of us in one room at the same time. So we got the lovely Gordon to come in and take a photo of us so that we could all be in the same shot. So there you go. So if you don't like the photo, it's all Gordon's fault. Ring him up.
Just complain.
Just give us a call at 1-300-JOY-949 and tell Gordon what you think of his handiwork.
And he's shaking his head, yeah.
Now, we've been talking tonight about a historic and monumental decision of the United Nations Human Rights Council last week to appoint an independent expert on sexuality and gender identity. We've been talking through some of the complexities of getting that through and the number of no votes, a block of countries who tried to block it. But we should give credit to the yes vote, the in vote for Brexit, if you like, but not Brexit, because there was this huge groundswell of support behind this, led by Outright Action International, who we've spoken with before. Amnesty was in there, a whole lot of groups who supported this. 628 NGOs, non-government organisations, from 151 countries.
And Australia was in there as well.
Who was in there from Australia?
We have the Australian Catholics for Equality, the Bisexual Alliance from Victoria in Australia.
We've got Kaleidoscope, Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Human Rights Council of Australia and the Human Rights Law Centre, and Brisbane LGBTIQ Action Group.
So our friends at Kaleidoscope in there advocating again for particularly rights across the Asia Pacific, but this one has much greater implications beyond that as well. So really good to see some Australian groups in there supporting this resolution and helping it to go through. Now, the other big thing that's coming up on the UN which could help to shape LGBT rights is a new UN Secretary General.
Yep. Could help or could hinder.
Could help or could hinder. So we've had Ban Ki-moon has been there for quite some time and his term is coming to a close, and he has proven to be a very strong advocate of LGBT rights around the world. What happens now?
Well, the UN has always... basically, the five Security General countries have always nominated a person, then taken it to the rest of the UN, who can then say yes or no. So basically,
have they ever said no?
I doubt it. So basically, they nominate the person and get them in. Those five permanent security countries are Russia, US, China, UK and France. And now there's been huge online petitions from oneforsevenbillion.org, which has about, yeah, hundreds of different NGOs involved in that, and also Avaaz, to have a people's vote for the UN Secretary General. So every country should be able to put forward its nomination, and we all get to hear what each of those nominees sees as the future for being Secretary General. So we'll have an idea of who might be good for LGBTI rights beforehand.
And we have some familiar names actually in the contest.
Yep, Helen Clark.
Helen Clark from New Zealand. There's always rumours about Kay Rudd.
Yeah, there's rumours about Kay Rudd. There's rumours about Angela Merkel. There's a lot of Eastern Europeans in the running this time because there's never been an Eastern European Secretary General. Also, there's never been a female, so hopefully there'll be a woman this time as well.
So stay tuned. We'll bring you the news. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, I'm Mamikon Hopsepian. I work for Pink Armenia, and our organization deals with LGBT issues here for the Worldwide Wave.
A fascinating look into one of the strong decisions of the United Nations in this past week in support of LGBT people. A thank you to the interviewees, the Chilean ambassador to the UN, Marta Moras, Charles Radcliffe from the UN Human Rights Office, Jessica Stern from Outright Action International, all courtesy of UN Radio.
And we'd like to thank all the messages that have come in on Facebook. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
And we'd like to Greg thank on the SMS too.
Yes, that's it. Our wonderful podcaster, Mark, who's been slaving away. And, of course, the lovely Gordon at the front desk.
We'll catch you next week on Worldwide Wave. Yet I can feel you.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.